So you don't need to worry about this little thing. Mm-hmm. So the way we start out is usually I ask people to say their full name, their birth date, date of birth, and because, you know, if someone listens to this 20 years from now, they can know a context, and where you're from and where you live now. Okay. So that's a lot, but go ahead.
Hi, I'm Alana Hodges Wallace. My birth date is 6/24/51, and I was born and raised in Chicago, and I currently reside in Chicago on the South Side. I'm sorry, on the South Loop now.
Yes, very good. Okay, so you don't have to worry about this thing. Just don't pretend it's not even there. So you were just asking me, what am I going to do with these stories? And before we talk, I wanted to tell you that excerpts or quotes might be used in this book that I'm making. And of course, the book would be for any reader, whether you're sighted or whether you have low vision or no vision. So it's not just for people who are blind, but to kind of, for me as an artist, to experiment with textures and materials. I see, like, for example, on one of your cards, you have the little flower that's on top, and that, I'm thinking, you know, about those kind of surface applications on mm-hmm. a book. Mm-hmm. When the subject matter is about food heritage and food traditions, and that's something that anyone you talk to is going to have a story about. So I wanted to talk to you because it was so great to meet you as part of the event, and I would love to hear more about just you as, you know, as a person and growing up, and just even those photos. I would love to hear about those. So we can get started. I emailed you the first question, which was, what's a home-cooked dish that's an important tradition in your family? And the, you know, second part of that question was, how do you make it? So.
Wow. The first thing that comes to mind is our Thanksgiving dinner, because it's always the same. And I've kept that same tradition. We have turkey, dressing, my grandmother's slap-your-face macaroni and cheese, string beans and white potatoes, candied yams, garnish like olives, and but that's our standard Thanksgiving dinner. And as a matter of fact, we also have that same dinner for Christmas, and always hot rolls to go along with it, and lots of pies and cakes. But for some reason, I know a lot of families kind of do something different, but every Thanksgiving, I fix macaroni and cheese, dressing, it's got to be from scratch, cornbread dressing, string beans and white potatoes, candied yams, and I did say turkey. Turkey is our meat of choice. Although some of my family members do add other meats like ham and roast beef, but for me, just turkey.
So I'm going to nod a lot because I don't want to be too, you know, interrupting you too much, even though usually I'd be like, mm-hmm, you know, so I'm trying to stay quiet so you'll see me nodding. You mentioned that you were fasting right now, but you don't observe Ramadan. And I know that there's another tradition called Black August. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Not.
Black August is during the month of August. Some people who are, you know, maybe interested in issues around prison rights and prisoners' rights, fast for the month of August in solidarity with different political prisoners, mostly black American prisoners. So I recently learned about that. So
I was doing it in solidarity to my Muslim friends, and just for the discipline of it all, and just to spiritually keep myself connected and to just test it. But now I will, since this is the month of August, I will add that on as part of my commitment and tribute to this fast that I'm doing for the month of August. That's I'm learning. That's great.
You should look it up. I think if you look it up on the internet, there's more better and more in-depth information than
what I'm surprised I don't
you.
Know about that. I mean, as soon as you kind of said it, it sounds familiar, but I don't know all the details, but I will look it up.
And so how are you feeling now? It's August. What's the date?
Today is the 9th.
The August 9th. So how is this fast going for you?
I have to admit that I went off one day, but I'm really proud of how it's going because I eat a little something, just some cherries and water before sunrise, and then I don't eat any more until sunset around 8:30 p.m. So far, so good.
Do you think it, do you, did you change your activities for the day because of it, or did you adjust anything?
No, I haven't really, but what's really hard is I had a lunch meeting one day, and I was really proud of myself that I still didn't eat because I was so tempted being around, you know, a gathering where you're socializing, everybody's eating, but I did okay.
Well, I wanted to go back to what you were talking about in terms of the home-cooked traditions and the family foods. Who hosts the Thanksgiving or the Christmas dinners in your family nowadays?
Unfortunately, it's really it really doesn't happen anymore, I'm sad to say. It always was such a big deal growing up as a kid. My grandmother would host. My grandmother lived to be 104, mentioned that to you. And my grandmother started the tradition. But as the family grew a little larger, the daughters, my grandmother's daughters, my mom and her sisters, would take turns hosting Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner, and that was always.
That's all right.
Could you want to hold
please,
it?
Sure, okay, I'll pause it. You were saying about the traditions, the women in your family.
Mm-hmm. Right. And my grandmother taught everybody the recipes for how to make her cornbread dressing. And I have learned to make the macaroni and cheese, which stayed a secret for a long time. But my mom finally showed me how to do it. And I don't profess to be a great cook, but for some reason, it's real important for me to get that particular, the Thanksgiving and the Christmas dinner down pat. And my son looks forward to it. So that's one dinner I have mastered.
And if you were to explain this macaroni and cheese to someone who didn't know the first thing about making anything, what would you say?
Okay, I'm giving away our family trade secret here now. But it's all in the layering. My grandmother did lots of layers. And everything was real specific. We use elbow macaroni and cheese. You boil that, but you don't let it cook all the way. You put a thin layer of macaroni, then you salt and pepper that layer. Then you put slithers of butter, little thin slices of butter all on top of the macaroni, and then lots of extra, extra sharp cheddar. It's gotta be extra sharp cheddar. No other cheese. I know a lot of people use 5 cheeses. It's not necessary. And then you put another layer. You keep doing that in your clear casserole dish until you reach the top. And the very top layer, you add even extra, extra sharp cheddar and cheese, you know, even more. And then you beat up 2 eggs and some milk. It's got to be whole milk and 2 eggs. You beat that up together. And then you pour that solution into the casserole dish until it's about, you can see it floating about a third of the way up. Then you cover it and you bake it in the oven at like 325, 350. And when it's done, then you take the lid off, the top off, and let the top brown. And I swear, my son just got married. His new wife, I went there to Atlanta last year to cook them the macaroni and cheese. She called me 2 days ago because she wanted the recipe to the macaroni and cheese. So now I'm handing it down.
Very good. So yeah. Did she try it yet?
She tried it, although the kids, I gotta say, young people are a little more health conscious, so she used wheat macaroni and cheese. I'm not so, you know, she, so I was like, oh, I don't know, but they claim it came out good.
So the noodles were wheat instead of
just regular, that's right, regular elbow macaroni.
And does your son like to cook?
No, but my son likes to, I shouldn't say he doesn't like to cook. His wife is a great cook. She loves to cook. She's from the Philippines. But my son's gotten into doing barbecuing. That's what he's And so that was shocking to me because he never cooked before he left home. But he barbecues. And I hear he's pretty good at it.
Are you a fan of barbecues, outdoor cooking?
I am. On our terrace, we barbecue a lot. And I can't reach the grill, but I do enjoy grilled food and barbecue food. I do enjoy it.
So do you like to cook? Or in my email I mentioned, you know, some people actually aren't big cooks and they like to go out to eat. And
no.
How would you describe yourself?
I'm not a big cook. I probably prefer to clean toilets rather than cook. I swear, I'm the cleanup person. But there are some meals that I do. It's interesting. I say I don't like to cook only because I don't like to do it on command. You know, I think I used to be married, and I was a wife that years ago had to have the meal ready when the husband came home. And I swore that if, you know, that marriage ended, that I did not want to identify with that role again. And so I don't. So I don't consider myself a big cook. But there are things that I have as specialties. I've got a skillet chicken and rice, that everything's all in one skillet, that I really love to cook. And as I said, I love to do the Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner. And I'm real good at breakfast, like bacon, eggs, and grits, and toast or coffee cake. So I'm real good with breakfast food.
That sounds nice. Mm-hmm. I like breakfast food a lot, too.
But do you eat grits?
I do like grits.
Really?
Well, because I grew up in Virginia, and grits are anywhere, you know, you can find them anywhere.
Really?
And then when I went away to college, I realized like people didn't know what grits were.
That's right. Right, right.
Like, is it like oatmeal? And I was like, no. So part of my project actually has to do with these Southern food traditions and how they do migrate, or, you know, from my family's from Iran. Mm-hmm. And so there's food traditions that we have, Iranian food traditions that we have, that other people in the United States don't know about, or they don't know about certain ingredients. And for me, that was where the idea for the project came from, this feeling I had that, oh, well, food is actually a cultural marker, even if we don't even think about it, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't think about, like, well, in the United States, we're used to eating bread and butter or, like, cereal for breakfast, but in another country, they're eating rice, you know. So
that's
this
true.
Sense that we take it for granted that there's a cultural meaning to foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if you ever think about that, or if that's something that's not really on your radar, you know, in terms of a connection to, you know, well, in terms of Black culinary traditions, do you feel like there is something like that, or do you feel like that's a false kind of idea?
No, I think there's a big cultural tradition of food and socializing and gathering and just sharing. For instance, 2 days ago I was at a family reunion, and it's just so, you know, such a big tradition to gather and bring dishes, and Aunt so-and-so made the cake, and this one made the such-and-such, and, you know, Uncle Joe's over there getting the barbecue grill going. And so there's a lot to be said around food and how families connect, I feel, around food. I mean, even tonight, I didn't know it was my cousin's birthday, but she's coming by, and the first thing is, well, what are we going to have to eat, you know, even if we don't, you know, are we going to go up on your terrace and barbecue a little something, or are we going to stop off and get some turkey hot links or something to, but so the celebration, I don't know any celebration that doesn't somehow focus around food for families.
Someone else was telling me that, or at least two other people told me last weekend that they had a family reunion.
Yes.
Why do you think at this time of year is a popular, like, why is it happening now? Or is that just a coincidence?
Summer, and a lot of people are coming from out of town. And if you're hosting in Chicago, of course, you want to invite people here while the weather's nice, and you can take them around and do things. I know four family reunions of people that are really close to me that happened this past weekend.
Yeah.
One of which I attended, but others, you know, they just called me today telling me how much fun they had at the family reunion.
So usually the family reunion for your family is more like a potluck style, or is it one day over one day or several days, or how does it work?
Now this is really interesting. I've never had a family reunion. Our family's never had a family reunion on either side. It's a very small family, and it always amazes me when other families, you know, have these huge family reunions, and they're over 3 days, and one was at Indian Trails, and on, you know, one night they had a bus come and get them at midnight and take them to the casino. Then one day they have a cookout, and they have, you know, line dancing. And it's so, I know about family reunions, and I've been to other people's, but our family, neither on my dad's side or my mom's side, have ever hosted one. And I find that very interesting, but I think it's because there are very few people on both sides. The it seems that the adults didn't have a lot of children. Mm-hmm. Like my mom, I'm my mom and dad's only child. Her sisters and brothers, either they didn't have any children. My mom's brothers didn't have any children before they passed away. And her two sisters only had one child. Mm. And so there weren't a lot of children. And I don't know, you know, I don't know a lot about a town family. So I think it just kind of never happened.
So how was the food at this reunion? Did you, what was the best dish? Or did, if there was a contest, how would you rate it?
Well, I went with my boyfriend. And so his aunt made this wonderful, these coffee cake squares. And so I take it that's a real tradition in their family, and they were delicious. I didn't eat a lot at this particular...
Oh, right, because of the fasting.
Right. So
yeah, it's so easy to
fast. I know. So but that was the day that I told you I broke it one day. Mm-hmm. So I did break it on Sunday, but I still didn't eat a lot.
Yeah. So you have all these wonderful pictures on your wall, and you were saying that your family's small. My family's a bit small, too, compared mm-hmm. to other families I know.
Right.
So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit, especially with in terms of the matriarchs in your family who sound like they were really in, you know, running the household in terms of the cooking.
Right.
There's a picture there of your mother.
Right.
So can you tell me about that?
There's a picture of my mom when she was a young girl. And I don't think, forgive me, Mom, I don't think my mom was the cook that my aunts and my grandmother mm-hmm. was. You know, in my immediate household, my mom, dad, and myself, my mom cooked really basic meals because my dad had a very limited palate. He only wanted meat, potatoes, and bread, you know, and a salad. You know, he didn't really eat soul food, but my mom and I loved it. So a lot of times she would fix separate meals for me and her, but my dad still had to have these same little basic meals. So I love collard greens. I love red beans and rice, navy beans or Great Northerns. So my mom would make other dishes that she and I would have that were handed down from my grandmother. But my grandmother was probably the real cook. And then my two aunts were also. They were real homemakers and real cooks. Even though they worked 9-to-5 jobs, I think they picked up that tradition more than my mom did. And then I didn't do well at all with picking up the cooking tradition.
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, as women, there is this expectation that women are the, you know, the ones who are going to be doing the cooking. And I think that has been true, but it's changing a lot. And that's
yes.
not, you know, I was really interested about what you were saying when you made this conscious decision after mm-hmm. your marriage. You know, that wasn't something you were that interested in.
That's so right.
I'm wondering if you see that change or if you feel like it's still pretty divided in terms of gender, like what we expect from our children or our families.
It is changing. In my second marriage, my husband did all the cooking, and it was such a delight. But now that I'm back out on my own again, it's interesting to hear still a lot of men are looking for Betty Crocker, you know, and sometimes, you know, you try to hesitate to say, well, I just want to let you know I'm not your girl that's, you know, slaving over pots and pans in the kitchen. That just doesn't happen to be my specialty. And I'm trying to hold fast to that, you know, I want to be true to myself because I enjoy cooking, but I don't enjoy it on command. That's what I've discovered about myself.
And one thing I wanted to mention is that if you hit the table with your hands or anything like that, it comes up. It's all right. It's all right. It's no problem. I will be cutting out anything that is extraneous. So okay. Just something to think about. One thing you mentioned was this term soul food, and you know that that's in the title of the project. It's called Garlic and Greens, Accessible Soul Food Stories. So one question I've been asking everyone is, what is soul food? How do you define it?
I think when I think about soul food, it's usually a big pot of something. Like you put on the ham hocks and you cook your meat or your...
That's all right.
The
you should get the
never
no,
rings.
You should get the phone.
Is this the craziest?
That's always the way. But
yeah, you call yourself and then the phone's on busy.
Oh,
with the voicemail, that trick doesn't.
No, yeah.
That trick doesn't.
I think each phone has its own way of like cutting the silencing the ringer. I'm not sure.
Oh my God.
Well, we don't worry about it. I don't want you to miss your call.
The only one I needed was the first.
Well,
one.
I'm just gonna pose the question again.
Yeah,
we'll start from totally from scratch.
Okay.
So the question was, how would you define soul food?
What first comes to mind when I think about soul food is a big pot of something where you start with your meat, either your ham hock or your neck bones or your smoked turkey leg now that people are being a little more health conscious, and you cook that meat until it's real, real tender. And then most people take that meat and they rinse it off or cut it off the bone, and then they rinse the meat off and then they put it back into the pot, and then they add their string beans there or their greens or their whatever else is, because the meat's used to flavor the, but that's what first comes to mind when I think about a big pot of something with accompanied by some homemade cornbread, you know, cornbread cooking in the oven. And usually some rice is on the side to go with the dish. Rice or potatoes are either added to the dish, like cabbage. You might put in some diced potatoes, some carrots, and into cabbage. So I just think about a pot of something that's... those are the kinds of things that make me think about soul food.
The flavors are brewing.
Fried chicken.
But, and what... Where does this term soul, like, what does that mean? Because I work with a student, and I asked him what soul food was, and he said, soul food is what people ate when they had Soul Train. I thought it was so funny.
Okay, that's about the funniest answer I think you'll get.
Yeah.
I think you had asked a youngster.
Yes, he was maybe 10 years old.
Yeah, so that's so funny.
He thought it was, I think he was very earnest about it, but I was just... thinking about that use of the word soul for so many different types of things, and how does it relate to the food aspect?
Yeah, when I think of soul, it also sometimes speaks to a Black culture or a certain culture. Certainly the Black culture identifies with the word soul in a lot of ways. It means, you know, the love and the care and the just something that's really indicative to how we come up from the South or a Southern background somehow. Some kind of speaks to a soul reference or cooking from the heart, where people didn't measure food. People just knew how to fix it, either because that recipe was handed down from someone else's family or mother. So that's what I think about. It's not following recipes from a book.
I like that. I think that's a really nice definition, this idea of something from the heart and heart and soul.
Yeah, from your heart and soul.
That's really
cooking
nice.
With love.
So I when we had our event, we had a chef cater the event. I don't know if you tried any of the food. We didn't really have much time, did we?
No, and you know what? It looked so good, and I really wanted to try, but
I didn't
have
much either. Why were you nervous?
Well, because I don't eat before I speak or before I'm doing a gig, you know, a performance gig of any type. And then by the time it was over, I was kind of bombarded with questions, and I did. But I was peeking at those plates, and I a couple of times wanted to jump off the stage and try some stuff.
Well, it's interesting because that chef, he does vegan soul food, so there's no meat or dairy or any animal products in it.
Wow.
And you were saying that, you know, that's taste, that flavor that comes from those stocks are really important. Most people would associate that with soul food. So I'm wondering, is that an oxymoron for you, to this idea of a vegan soul food, or have you ever had it? And what do you think of this notion?
It is a little bit, but I'm getting convinced that they have found, probably a few years ago, I would have said, "Oh, come on!" I would naysay that altogether. I wouldn't want to try any vegan soul food. And you're right; that would be an oxymoron for me. Just to even identify with that, and not being start with some good meat and whatever. But they are finding ways. And even I have experimented now with using more seasoning or something else to give things flavor without so much fat and so much greasy ingredients like we're accustomed to using. And we are trying to all be more health conscious, a lot of us that are evolving. And so I'm not totally opposed to that idea now. I'm probably not so eager to try a lot of stuff, because I'm one of those people who I'm not that curious. I kind of stick with what really works, and so, or what's worked over the years. But I can understand people stretching their taste buds.
So speaking of evolving, do you feel like your eating habits have changed from when you were younger? How so?
I make a conscious effort to make sure to include vegetables and fruit. And I know as a kid, I was the typical kid. I didn't want anything green on my plate. I really didn't. You know, the greenest thing that I ate probably as a kid was salad. You know, I thought that was a big deal. For some reason, I always liked string beans, though. I guess maybe, or pole beans. But not too many other vegetables was I keen on. It was an acquired taste. As I got older, I did start liking more vegetables.
So you said you were a salad person when I
still
gave you
a salad
the cucumbers.
Person. Yeah, very much a salad person.
What's a good salad combo for you?
For me, probably not the healthiest lettuce, because I still like iceberg. I like crisp and crunch. So a good salad for me would be iceberg and romaine lettuce, with tomatoes, cucumbers, lots of croutons, a little broccoli, a little cauliflower cut up in the salad, lots of shredded carrots, and a great dressing like a raspberry vinaigrette mixed with some honey mustard, or just a simple ranch dressing. So for me, that's heaven. No cheese on my salad and no eggs. Ugh.
So, did we talk about your favorite restaurants, or do you go out to eat much?
My favorite restaurant is Houston's. Even though our Houston's moved away, when I go to Atlanta, my son gets so sick of me because every time I'm there, I want to go to Houston's every day because they still have Houston's. So Houston's is my favorite restaurant. Close second is the Grand Lux. Pearl's was great for some soul food, not like my grandmother's, but you know, it was certainly okay. But anytime I think about food, I think about Houston's and Grand Lux.
And is Pearl's still around?
Pearl's is still around. It's on 39th and Michigan. Also, my other favorite place closed up, Dixie Kitchen, just recently closed up in Hyde Park. Fried catfish, fried green tomatoes, collard greens, candied yams. So, yeah, they just closed up.
Do you know anything about that? Why?
I think the university bought the property, and from what I know, there is another Dixie Catfish out in the burbs, but it's far away from me, so I don't really go to that one.
And what's the difference? You said Pearls wasn't like your family cooking. What's the big difference if you go out to eat soul food or if you eat
it's at probably home? The way you're used to your family seasoning things, or to the degree they cook things. Someone else may have string beans a little more crunchy, whereas my family cooks string beans until they're really cooked well. And you know, it's just what you're used to and what really tastes good to you. So yeah, that's what it is.
And did you grow up on the south side, you said?
I did. I grew up on the south side.
So where was that? Where did you spend most of your time?
I grew up between 49th and Forest Field and St. Lawrence, like right near the old Provident Hospital. So I grew up right in that area for many, many years. And then I didn't move very far as an adult. I moved right to High Park, which was not very far away from that area. And lived in High Park for lots of years. And now I'm in the South Loop.
It must be very convenient here because you're near the train and kind of, you know, it's getting to be a walkable area. They have more shops than before.
This is a great area. It's close to where I rehearse. I'm close to downtown. So I love the South Loop.
And what about your neighborhood growing up? How would you describe it? Or I don't know what it's like now, but in that time when you were growing up, what was the neighborhood like?
You know what was so different? We, as kids, we could go out on the front and play, and you knew that the neighbors were looking out the window at all the kids, and neighbors could also say something to the kids, and you know, you knew everybody on your block. Whereas now, I live in a huge high rise, and you know, you see your neighbors and you speak, but there isn't the same kind of interaction. You know, people dare not to speak to other people's kids, like, you know your mother wouldn't want you doing that, you better stop doing that, you know. And now you're afraid to speak to someone's kid because it's not as accepted. And then there were households where there were extended families. The grandmother sometimes lived in the household along with the mom and the dad, and you know, maybe an aunt or an uncle was also there. So there were a lot of extended family folk. And in my family, my aunts lived within like two block radius. So we could just go right around the corner to our aunt's house, or you know, walk to another aunt's house, or not that far from my grandmother. Yeah. So I think the connection was very different.
Yeah, it's a shame we don't have more of that now.
Mm-mm.
And did you, how long has your family lived in Chicago? How many generations have you been here?
I think my family migrated from Mississippi and Arkansas. I was born in 51. My mother was born in 29, and she was born here in Chicago, 1929. So my grandmother probably came up in the early 20s to Chicago. And my grandmother always used to say that she was born in 1904, so she saw horse and buggies all the way to rocket ships going into space. So that's a long span of time to have lived. Horse and buggy days to things going up into space.
And do you know what prompted her and her family to move here?
Better opportunities for work.
Mm-hmm. I imagine she wasn't working, but what was the family doing? What kind of business were they in?
I think when my grandmother first came, she may have been doing cleaning in someone else's house. But then my grandmother, so proud to say that my grandmother, I think, was in her 50s, and she went back and got her education to be a nurse. So she, in later years, she went on to become an LPN, and I have my grandmother's nurse's pin, you know, after she passed away, because she was just so proud of that achievement. And I think it instilled in us to how important education is.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I brought you these cucumbers. Now I realize maybe it's not the best timing, but maybe they'll keep in the refrigerator. I don't know.
They won't be here very long.
Okay. Well, you could eat them instead of the cherries, I guess, for your morning.
No, I'll have them for dinner.
Oh, okay.
I'll have them soon at
very
sunset.
I think it would be very refreshing, actually.
I so appreciate that.
Have you ever gardened, or are you interested in gardening? I've only become interested in the past couple of years, but I didn't care much about it before that.
I think gardening is very interesting, although I've never done it. I would love to, but ironically enough, I've never lived any place where I would be able to garden. I've never lived in a house. I've always lived in apartments. I lived in a condo. Now I'm back in apartment living. So my family never owned a home or a house, my mom and dad. And after I left home, I always lived in apartments. Because I'm fearful of living on the ground. I have to be up high because I've got a fear of, you know, you may not want that on tape, but I can't live on the ground level because I'm fearful of mice and things that I think are going to come, or break-ins, because I went through some traumatic things around that. And so for me, I need to be where there isn't a back door, where there's some height, and I know no one can climb up the window. And
yeah, that makes sense.
So,
you know, I just, in my neighborhood listserv, someone wrote that people are pushing the air conditioning unit into the house, like they're climbing up to the window and pushing the air conditioning, window ones.
Yeah.
And I thought, ooh, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like...
Do you live in a house?
I do live in a house, but I don't... I know what you're saying, that, you know, there's also less privacy feeling, especially if you live in the city, to live on the ground floor. You could, because I lived in the apartment on the ground floor, and you just, anyone can walk by and see you, and, you know.
Right, I never get to sleep. And even as it is, because I went through a few traumatic experiences, I'm one of those people that's up checking the door. So, you know, even though I'm, like, now feel as safe as I can feel, certain things happen to you that affect you.
Well, for sure. That, and, you know, as being a city dweller, I think there's some comfort in living above and looking at the landscape from there. I asked about gardening because the people I'm working with, the project, we were designing ways for people to garden who have disabilities, so you would be able to reach the garden bed because it would be lifted up higher, or
how cool is
you know
that?
there's a sense that gardening, you have to get down to the ground.
That's right.
And I think that doesn't have to be the case. Also more and more people are gardening on rooftops and in containers in the city, so
stupid question.
Yeah.
Can you garden in your house? And is there anything that will
inside?
Grow yeah food
if you
wise?
Have a sunny spot, you can grow a lot of things, but you have to be facing, you know, a sunny area. So my place faces north, so there's no good sunlight that way. I have some fluorescent lamps that I use in the winter. So I do grow some things, but they're not so happy. But then when spring and summer comes, they'll go outside and they're much happier.
I wish I could grow something on our terrace on the 7th floor.
Well,
we've got a terrace area.
You might be. I mean, I don't know how the board works here in your building, but I think it's becoming more and more popular. People have bees on their rooftops. I'm a volunteer beekeeper at Garfield Park. And so I'm learning all about how many... I just thought it was this very specialized thing, and I was doing it at the park. But recently, it's been really very popular in the city that people have bees on their rooftops, because bees like to be in the sun, in the open air. They don't want to, you know, be crowded in. So, but that's a special skill, I think. Not everyone's going to want to have bees. But they bring us honey. So
that's right. That's right. We need them. I was going to say, do they help with the gardening?
And honey is good. It is very good for your garden, because if we don't have bees to pollinate the plants, we can't like the cucumber. If the cucumber flower doesn't get pollinated by something, people have to hand pollinate it, so they kind of use a little stick to do it.
But
naturally bees are supposed to be doing that.
Do you grow tomatoes? Because
I have some
homegrown tomatoes.
Yeah, they're just still a little green.
Okay.
But they're coming. I think next week or the week after, I'll have a lot of tomatoes.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll have to stop by.
If you need to get rid of any, I'm your girl.
I'd be happy to. Yeah,
I'm
usually
your girl.
There's too many. So.
Really?
Well, if you depending on how many plants you have. But I don't garden in my yard because, as I said, I don't have a good spot. I garden in an empty lot next to my place. Isn't that funny?
That's so cool.
Well, I contacted the owner. He doesn't care as long as nobody's complaining about his lot being abandoned. And I was like, well, why don't you sell it? And he said, no, I'm waiting out the market. So,
well, good.
But
in
meanwhile,
the meantime,
I'm guerrilla gardening, they say.
What else are you growing? Tomatoes, cucumbers?
Tomatoes, cucumbers. We have two watermelons and two other kind of melons, honey something, more light colored. I don't remember what
honeydew?
They're called.
Honeydew?
No, they're not really honeydew. They're like, I want to say Honeycrisp, but that's an apple.
Meet a black girl who's allergic to watermelon.
Oh, why is
Can
that?
Can you believe
what
it?
What happens when you eat watermelon?
I'm allergic to melons. As a kid, I would go ahead and eat them anyway and just go ahead and break out, but I'm allergic to any kind of melon. Cantaloupe, honeydew, watermelon. Can you believe
it? That's very interesting. What about summer squashes or other things on the seedy things on a vine?
Not sure if I'm allergic to squash, but I don't eat it. Mm. Yeah.
So what happens when you break out? Do you have hives or is
it's been so long, but as a kid, yeah, I would just break out in like, blotches of red spots I would go ahead and do it then. But now I don't even like when you get a fruit plate, if the melon is kind of touching because I love pineapple, but if it's touching something, I try to, I avoid.
They're always putting melons in the fruit plate.
Always. Honeydew, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cantaloupe, I mean. Yeah,
yeah.
Cantaloupe.
Well, I have collard greens and kale and cabbage.
Cabbage?
Like
cans of cabbage?
Well, I just have a couple, not a lot. Just one little guy is coming up.
That's
and,
cute.
Are
tomatoes and
herbs? Well, they're not hard to grow. They need a lot of soil. So for rooftop gardening, that's interesting because, some places, if you're renting a space, you have to be careful about how much weight you're putting on the roof with the soil. So, but it's totally possible. I went to a rooftop garden where they had everything in containers, and you can use like old pickle buckets. They're kind of like, I don't know how many gallon pickle bucket, maybe this high.
Or chitterling buckets.
Yes, there you go.
Now that's something I don't eat that my family, I remember my family fixing or cooking.
Why don't you eat it?
I don't know. I think as a kid I was turned off by the smell. And even though I know as I got older, they say that, there doesn't have to be that smell. But for me, it's pretty distinct. And it just wasn't a food that looked appealing they could not get me to even taste it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't tried the couple of restaurants that you mentioned, Houston's. I have never been there.
You've never been to a Houston's? They're a chain.
It's a national chain.
Yeah, they're a national chain and they're in different cities.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have just one son in Atlanta or do you have other children?
I have one son and in my prior marriage, I had three stepchildren, but I personally have one son.
Oh, okay.
He lives in Atlanta.
So he lives in Atlanta. You visit him. And
yeah,
the
and he
vi- are there.
He'll be here Friday. We've got to attend a family wedding, so he'll be here Friday
Very
to
good.
Visit. Just got married.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're both doctors.
Very
doing
nice.
Their residency.
So this medical tradition lives on in your family in a way. With your, you said your grandmother was a nurse.
That's true.
Your son is a doctor.
And my cousin's son, her son's a doctor, also. So he was somewhat of a mentor to my son. But I feel like I didn't give you good stuff.
Oh no! This was great.
Because there was so much stuff that, like we talk about family reunions. Oh, my family never had a family reunion. And
well,
we talk about,
I'm not interested in a kind of predetermined or, like, I don't know what people are going to say, and mm-hmm. I'm sort of, you know, as you see, I don't want it to seem like I have notes and, like, lots of predetermined questions to ask. I'm sure as you were talking, I thought of many questions that I wanted to ask, and I've totally forgotten them, so I keep thinking, like, what did I want to say earlier? You know, that's how it goes. But do you have any questions for me? I said, to be fair, you should be able to ask me some questions.
But you know something I thought about to add?
Yeah.
Something that stands out about Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner was that most of my family's houses were really, really small. And I remember that all the adults would sit around what we called the big table. And the kids were in another room at the little table, maybe a card table, because everybody couldn't fit. And that was always so funny, because the kids, when we sat at our table, we would we thought that was a big deal, because then we could kind of talk and share with each other without the adults hearing our conversation, and we were making fun of the adults because, of course, they weren't cool. Mm-hmm. And that stands out in my mind about eating and the separation of the table not being generally big enough for everybody, and apartments being so small, you know, but it still didn't mean that we weren't going to all get together. You're going to find a way to, and there were two sittings, like later on it got to be where, you know, the first set of folks would sit down to eat, and then there was the second sitting.
Because there were so many people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you had to mm-hmm. do it in two separate sets.
So, as a dancer, you are you're an artist that works with your body. Mm. How would you describe about consumption or preparation of food in terms of the senses? Because, as a body movement person, you know, you must be aware of, like, this kind of multi-sensory experience, and that's something I'm trying to think about. What does that mean in terms of our experience of food?
Yeah, I think aroma certainly plays a big part in what's appealing, especially for me. And maybe that's why I'm so fond of breads and things that have that real homey, sweet, aromas like that, where more pungent smells are a bit of a turnoff for me. So I've got a very limited palate too. Like, I don't experiment a lot. Something does have to appeal to my senses. The look of it is real important, and how it smells is like, I'm not real big on fish simply because sometimes I just can't get past the smells, or certain cheeses. It's like, oh, I can't, you know. So that's interesting. Yeah, that's real big for me.
The scent is very powerful.
Very powerful.
You were going to say something.
Yeah, that can truly determine whether my taste buds are going to light up or not. Mm-hmm. And I found that I've tried to really cut back my portion sizes, because you were speaking to the fact that I'm a dancer. I'm not by any means at my ideal weight, of course, but are we ever? But portions, I'm really trying to cut back on portion sizes.
Do you find in terms of the dancers you work with that there is a very particular relationship to food? Because, you know, that's the stereotype. So I'm wondering, how is it in reality with your experience?
Yeah, in reality, we love food. We love to eat. We love food. It's just that we're always challenging and testing our discipline not to overdo it, or not to overindulge, or not to eat too much, too many of the wrong foods. You know, it's like we reward ourselves. It's like we play these games. I know I do. I play these games like, well, if I do this, you know, then I can have a little slither of pound cake. So I do this reward system with myself, you know. It's crazy. And I think that has to do with being a dancer, getting older, and all of that, and just trying to be more health conscious.
It sounds like maybe you're like your father in terms of your, you said you have a limited palate. Would you say that's true?
He did pass that down to me because we didn't have a lot of variety. Even though my mom and I had a few other dishes that we would eat that my dad wouldn't, we really still did not have, when I think about comparing our family to other families, I really wasn't exposed to. I could probably name so many foods I don't eat. I don't eat liver. I don't eat squash. I don't eat, you know, what's that fit? I don't eat, what's those things you crave? Lobster or crab.
Right.
I don't eat, you know, there's a lot. You've never tried lobster? You know, sushi, I've never tried it. There's so many things I can say, I shouldn't say I don't like them. I've never tried them. So.
Well, you know what you like. That's.
And I stick to it.
Right, exactly.
I'm so afraid of getting something in my mouth and not wanting it to be there. And how do you, that's a real fear for me, like gagging on something. So I just stick to what I know I like.
Yeah. Did you have any experiences with food as a child that you think determined this, that made you sensitive in this way, or?
I just don't know. I don't know if that limited diet of what I was exposed to truly just kind of stayed with me. And I'm a person that's not curious when it comes to things, you know, in the food area. Like, I don't have to, you know, it's not, I'm not adventurous in that area. Adventurous in a lot of others, but, you know, you've got to try the such and such. No, I don't, you know.
So are people disappointed if you say, oh, I don't
eat my
this,
God.
I don't eat watermelon. And
yes,
feeling.
They're so disappointed. You've got to try sushi. You've got to try oysters. You've got to try. No, I will not do it. Yeah.
Well, I don't think I have any other questions. I'm probably forgetting something. Maybe you have anything else to add. Please feel free to.
I wonder sometimes, do I fit that traditional bill of, you know, African-American tradition of a person who truly enjoys a lot of soul food? I enjoy soul food, but here again, it's still very limited. I can probably count which soul foods, you know, I really, really love and enjoy.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, well, I was talking to one woman, and she said, soul food is there's a soul food in every culture, and it has to do with what you were talking about, this feeling of really like the food from the heart that is home cooking, maybe.
That's right.
And that could be something different for everyone. If your dad was eating meat and potatoes, that's still, even though it may not be under soul food, with your mom's care in making that for him, I mean, that qualifies. So I'm not so interested in, your fitting a particular, prototype of what I was looking for, but more just different experiences that everyone has something different to
I think,
add.
I think something to add about what I feel soul food is, it's like two people with the same ingredients making the same dish, but one person's comes out better. And it's because that soul and that love and the way they combined everything and that little extra dab of something that, you know, exact same ingredients, but, you know, how they measured it all out, and that's that soul and that love combining. That's what makes that dish better than the other person's. I really believe that. Like you say, why didn't mine taste like that? It's because, hey, I put that little extra dab of love in it. Yeah.
Would you say you have a favorite person in your life, or someone you had who would have that kind of definition of theirs was just a little extra, a little better?
Yeah, I think it's got to be my grandmother. You know, it's got to be my grandmother. She was such a kind soul. I don't know anybody that didn't just, like, love my grandmother or my Aunt Jelly Roll, because my Aunt Jelly Roll made homemade biscuits, and I swear we could make a meal out of it. Just her homemade rolls from scratch. I remember watching her make them, and how, you know, they had to sit for a while, and sitting at the table and watching them rise, and then you got to do something else. You got to need, you know, oh my goodness, those rolls and just some butter, that was a meal.
And so, what was your grandmother's name?
Roberta Oliver.
Roberta Oliver. And your aunt's
name? My aunt Jelly Roll. We called her Aunt Jelly Roll, but her name was Mildred Stokes. Yeah, they really were two sweethearts that stand out in my mind, and it really spilled over into their cooking. Isn't that something? That they were kind souls, and it really spilled over into their cooking. That's a revelation.
Something to think about, I guess.
Yeah.
What that means.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's with any craft, maybe, that the spirit or the passion you have for it is important.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I don't want to take too much of your time. You have to get ready for your cousins.
Well, they're just coming over and kind of impromptu, and we don't even know what we're going to do. They thought about maybe barbecuing on the terrace, but it's a little windy up there because I went up to check when I was checking for the conference room. And so it's too windy to play cards up there. So we'll just play it by ear what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I thank you for including me. I don't know if there's even one sentence that will be worth your including.
I will keep you posted.
Okay.
It'll probably be a while as I have to listened to the interviews, and I may ask someone else to transcribe them where they type out what was said so I can go through it more quickly.
Yeah.
And editing, just pulling different parts out, you know, cutting out the stuff that we don't need. Mm-hmm. So I will definitely let you know what's happening.
Good.
Especially on the tactile graphics end of it.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, you're cutting it off?
Yes.
Okay.